with Dave Emery in the studios at KFJC. And it's a little bit after 8 o'clock, so that means what? It's time for One Step Beyond. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock tonight with lots of stuff to talk about. It's going to be an interesting evening tonight. And a little later in the broadcast with your phone calls and all kinds of other stuff. So settle down, pull up a chair, put your outrage glands on red alert, and we can get started with this stuff, okay? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I would counsel all listeners who are, I guess you might say, have an abiding interest in One Step Beyond to tape this evening's show. We mentioned last week that we've been targeted by Accuracy Incorporated, and their dual wings, or perhaps there's more than that, of Accuracy in Media and Accuracy in Academia. And we're going to read, among other things this evening, their piece on One Step Beyond from their latest, from Accuracy in Academia's latest campus report. And basically we're going to set that material in terms of, we're going to place it in a context and speculate about perhaps why we may be coming, you know, somebody as relatively insignificant as we are, coming under the scrutiny of an organization like Accuracy in Media, which is really quite powerful. So tape the show this evening. It will be not only available from DavCore, our tape duplication service that we work with, but this particular program is going to go into the permanent archive file, simply because I feel it's we feel it's important to have any future for archival purposes, that this particular controversy, such as it is, should be recorded for posterity. And we're also, our program this evening will also obviously represent something of a response to the piece by Accuracy in Academia. So if you're interested in the show, if you want to, if you're interested in this year of the Constitution in America, this would be a real, real good one to tape. So fire those machines up.
Indeed. We've got some rather interesting things. One of the things that we were commenting upon, apparently originally, we mentioned last week somebody had contacted the hierarchy here at the college and complained about, I guess, a piece that some ruminations Dave had done on the subject of Gloria Steinem and her rather questionable background vis-a-vis the CIA, and we knew somebody had contacted the president. It, as it turns out in this article, as you'll see, it was Reed Irvine himself, who is the high muckamuck of Accuracy in Media / Accuracy in Academia. He's followed it up with apparently sending a tape of the program in question to the president of the college, and on top of everything else, that then we did make the cover of the issue of Campus Report we're about to read to you. What's rather interesting, of course, is the fact that this organization is located in Washington, D.C. So somebody is sending this stuff out to Reed Irvine. I doubt that he was receiving KFJC's broadcast right in the shadow of the Capitol Rotunda. So somebody is sending it off to him, and he is going out of his way to get involved in the Bay Area. One of the things that Dave was talking about before the show is the fact that this has become a very hot area for a variety of reasons, not least of which is the focus of a lot of the Iran scam stuff and the Contragate stuff, and rather interesting parts of it in view of who Accuracy in Media are and what some of their connections are.
Yeah, and again, do tape the broadcast this evening, because it'll be a great thing to have, and show your grandchildren why they're living in a burned out 1965 Chevrolet station wagon or something. At any rate, some of the information that we were given concerning Accuracy and Accuracy Incorporated's targeting of us comes from Sarah Diamond, who works up at KPFA. She's also a reporter with the Pacific News Service, who interviewed Reed Irvine at a recent convention of the National Religious Broadcast. I've forgotten what their nationwide umbrella organization is, but anyway, the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. And apparently, according to Sarah, and this at this point remains hearsay evidence, but apparently a woman who's in the Air Force up in San Francisco has been, according to Reed Irvine in this interview that she had with him, apparently a woman in San Francisco who's in the Air Force has been taping our programs and sending either the programs and or transcripts to Accuracy Incorporated. By the way, if that woman is listening right now, since this is a phone-in talk show, after we finish our prepared portion, which will be quite long this evening, we will try and hold the phones open for about 5 minutes. If you would like to confront us yourselves or comment on what we have to say, this is a phone-in talk show, and if you would like to shed the cloak of anonymity that you currently wear and participate here in the dialogue, feel free to give us a call.
Well, as a matter of fact, some folks around the country might like to thank you, because it's probably the first good information that Reed Irvine has received in a long time. So maybe we have something to be thankful to you for. Anyway, we are going to read some of that subject, and then we're going to talk about some other things. And in our typical dirty leftist commie dupe way, we are going to strike back with what else? The facts, the most insidious form of propaganda that has been yet devised. So we're going to jump into that. Now, again, one last thing I wanted to throw in, again, echoing what Dave had to say, is we're getting a lot of attention here, folks, and it's not just because Dave and I are light on our feet and great dancers and stuff like that. It's because the area that we're in and the times that we're in, and you folks, by the very fact of sitting there on the other end of the radio, are participants. And let me tell you, these folks have money, they have time, a lot of them, and they have a real drive to change the face of this country to what they deem correct. And it behooves us, all of us, who feel that perhaps their vision is lacking something, to, again, to be willing to exert a little effort in turn. And again, not to pat Dave or myself on the back, which would be anatomically difficult anyway, but just to let you know, I mean, I was just thinking about this tonight. You know, we've been on the air here like about 7 years doing this stuff. We've held down this slot for 8 years. And a lot of times, and I must admit, Dave especially has been putting in a lot of hours on this show for years and years. So if everybody could put in, you know, some kind of time, like we said, please, calling other stations, writing congressmen, writing newspapers, things like that, instead of, as all of us tend to do at one time or another, kind of receiving things that we hear and go, oh, God, that's terrible. You know, isn't it a shame? If we all just put a little more effort in, because these folks are tireless, and these folks are organized that we're talking about, the folks, the accuracy in media and accuracy in academia and all the other little groups that are fronting for larger organizations. So, again, this is the time, folks, to put a little effort in, you know, exercise your freedom of speech, and exercise it soon while we still have one.
Mm-hmm. And prior on the subject of archive shows, going to give the listeners a couple of dates to remember. First of all, mark down the evening of Sunday, March 15th, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. That will be Radio Free America number 27. We're going to do one on a Sunday, due essentially to changes and nips in my work schedules. It's very difficult for us often to do two programs in 1 week, just due to, you know, our changing work schedules. So on Sunday, March 15th, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., we're going to do Radio Free America number 27, the fourth program in a projected five-part series dealing with our intelligence services' role in the narcotics traffic. And, again, our archive shows are intended for taping and use as audio reference works. The information that we present here would undoubtedly seem startling or, I guess, to one of Reed Urban's persuasion, outrageous. We base our statements on documentation which are available on a series of tapes from DAVCOR. That's a tape duplication service that's been stocking our tapes for quite some time. I would emphasize that neither NIP nor myself nor the station gets any money from this procedure. We have no financial connection with DAVCOR other than the fact that a former staff member at the radio station is their operations manager, and so we've been working with them in that capacity. Now, also, mark down the evening of Tuesday, March 3rd, because on that evening, from 8 p.m. to midnight, we're going to broadcast Radio Free America number 16, our program dealing with AIDS as a possible biological warfare weapon, on sister station KKUP in Cupertino. That's located at 91.5 on the FM dial. It's in mono only, so if you can get the station, don't worry if your stereo light doesn't come on, because it won't. KKUP is in glorious mono, however, for that our purposes, that's just fine. And I would encourage people to tape that program in particular, of all of our archive shows, and maybe make copies for other people. With some of the repeating archive shows on KKUP, those who have taped the programs the first time might want to tape it again, then have a backup copy, or they can send it to someone else. It's a good opportunity to get your hands on another copy of tapes, if only for a lending copy. But Tuesday, March 3rd, 8 p.m. to midnight, Radio Free America number 16, about AIDS, epidemic or weapon of war. Sister station KKUP 91.5 FM.
One last thing before I start this article. I just wanted to mention, again, to anybody out there listening, or if this eventually winds up in the diplomatic pouch shooting out to Washington, D.C., for an organization that calls itself Accuracy in Academia or Accuracy in Media, I must say, from my own knowledge, these organizations don't seem particularly interested in any kind of facts or in any kind of debate over the facts so much as they seem interested in shutting down opinions they don't agree with. And I would any time, and I'm sure Dave will back me on this, I will extend an open invitation to anybody from either of these organizations, Accuracy in Media or Accuracy in Academia, if they would like to come on the air with us and have a formal discussion about our sources and their sources, and if they would like to dispute us on our facts. And any time, any place, folks, if it's accuracy you want, You're not going to get it by stifling opinions you don't agree with, and you know it very well. So when this eventually does wind up in Washington, D.C., on Mr. Irvine's desk perhaps, Reed, drop on by anytime. We'd love to have you up here in Los Altos Hills. Okay, I'm going to read from the campus report from Accuracy in Academia. The article is headlined, entertainingly enough, Kooks on the Loose.
You might as well give them the subtitle,
too. Oh, yeah, I will. And the subtitle is One Step Beyond Sanity. The article is from the January 1987 edition of Campus Report, which, again, I will mention is a Washington, D.C. publication. At least that's its mailing address. Have you heard that the United States government may be engaged in an insidious plot to kill off political liberals, people involved in affirmative action programs, and people involved with helping the poor? Did you know that this was being done by somehow giving these people cancer so that they would appear to die of natural causes? If you didn't know about this, it's because you haven't been tuning into radio station KFCJ, they put here, a station funded and operated by Foothill College of Los Altos Hills, California. Foothill is part of California's vast system of public higher education, located 35 miles south of San Francisco and serving Silicon Valley. Its FM radio station, run by students and funded by the college, is supposed to provide training in broadcasting to equip the students to go out and get jobs in the real world. But the world, as seen from KFCJ, is one that makes the conspiracy theories of Lyndon LaRouche seem tame by comparison. When it isn't broadcasting punk rock, it is airing kook talk. Two of its stars are Nip Tuck and Dave Emery, who host a regular talk show called One Step Beyond. It is at least one step beyond sanity. Then they break for a moment to put in a photograph of the cover of Ms. Magazine with a little caption underneath that says, A CIA publication? Question mark. Campus Report has obtained a tape of a program that Tuck and Emery aired on November 9th. It began with Emery discussing a lengthy obituary of Sylvia Jacobson, affirmative action director for the San Francisco Civil Service Commission, who had just died of cancer at age 40. Jacobson had been highly praised by San Francisco Mayor Dianne Feinstein. Tuck and Emery were not interested so much in Jacobson's career as in the cause of her death at an early age. Emery explained his interest, saying, quote, There are a lot of obituaries like this appearing in the newspaper. People who would appear to be political liberals, people who are involved with affirmative action programs, people who have been very active on behalf of black or minority organizations, people who have been very active in liberal causes of all kinds, plus people who were involved with helping the poor, people involved with providing legal services for the poor, things of this kind. A lot of people like that, people in their late 30s, 40s, and early 50s, the most productive period of people's lives, there are a lot of these obituaries appearing, and what we're asking is how many of these people, ... have been dispatched by the authorities.
I would interrupt to say there are a lot of those ...
Yes,
in the article.
Yes.
They used what they wanted to and then left out what wouldn't suit them, as they did in the transcript portions that they sent to President Clements. In places it's just total non sequitur. It's just statements lifted from the context and juxtaposed together.
That's right. Emery continued, quote, People may first be inclined to say, gosh, what a crazy idea that our government might be going around assassinating political liberals by cancer. Well, we've looked at the facts, and it is a matter of fact that our own national security establishment has dispatched people of political persuasion, such as John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. People like that have been gotten rid of in the past. It is not unreasonable to suppose that people who got rid of them would like to get rid of other people like them. While we focus on the Nazi elements, it might seem crazy. There we go. It might seem crazy to people to think that the U.S. government might be assassinating people by cancer. But is it crazy to think that a bunch of Nazis might be willing to freely murder their political opponents? Obviously not. They don't make any bones about it. That's what they're into. And the reason we focus on the Gehlen organization, the SS and Gestapo men who moved into our intelligence system, shaped it to a large extent, as well as the openly sympathetic pro-Nazi elements, such as the ones grouped around the World Anti-Communist League and its intersecting elements such as Western Goals, obviously these people have a lot of power. They are very close to the Reagan administration, and for them, freely disposing of anyone whose views they don't care for is a matter of course. One of the things we have focused on in these broadcasts is our intelligence system's attempt to develop means of assassination which would mimic either disease or suicide or something else. Assassination by cancer is a fact. Unquote. Emery urged his listeners to read the obituaries, quote, and see how many people are dying from supposed suicides, cancers, and leukemias, in particular people like Sylvia Jacobson. Emery then attacked those, such as Israel's intelligence service, the Mossad, who have charged the Soviets with encouraging and abetting terrorism. He said most of the actions they had blamed on the Soviets, quote, turned out to be our operations in order to make the Soviets look bad in one way or another, the Pope shooting being one. He said that by ours he meant, quote, Western intelligence agencies, not specifically the U.S., although we're in there pitching, unquote. He added, Gaddafi, the Pope shooting being just two of the elements that come to mind, the Olympics massacre and others, unquote. Emery also charged that Gloria Steinem's Ms. magazine, quote, is essentially a CIA publication. He said, quote, its editor, Gloria Steinem, has been CIA for many, many years. Its first publisher was Elizabeth Forsling Harris, who planned Kennedy's motorcade route in Dallas, Texas, and was obviously up to her eyeballs in the assassination. One of the key stockholders was Katherine Graham, whose affiliation with CIA, as well as the Washington Post and Newsweek, we discussed in a Radio 88.1 One Step Beyond show that is available from DavCorp, unquote.
Take note of that Radio 88.1. We're going to touch back on that later.
DavCorp is a tape duplication service which sells tapes of the broadcasts of Emory and Tuck over KFJC. Reed Irvine, chairman of Accuracy in Media and Accuracy in Academia, asked Foothill College president Tom Clements if it would disturb him to learn that his radio station was airing charges that the government was practicing assassination by cancer, that it had killed John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr., and that U.S. or Western intelligence agencies were behind the attempt to kill Pope John Paul II. Dr. Clements said that it would indeed disturb him if KFJC was airing such statements, and that, if true, he would take action to see that it was stopped. He said that there had been complaints about the station, but that there had been nothing this specific. The tapes and a partial transcript of the Emory Tuck program have been sent to Dr. Clements. Well, a couple of things, first of all. First one is I'm really insulted that I wasn't quoted in this article anywhere with my leftist nonsense, but that's just
you made the transcripts.
Yeah, that's right.
You're in the transcripts in a big way.
Oh, good. Secondly, I think that their whole lead-in on this is just great. It's actually, it's word for word, I couldn't have put it better myself, where they talk about, did you know that what all was being done? Did you know the United States government may be engaged in this, that, and the other thing? Did you know that? If you didn't know about this, it's because you haven't been tuning into radio station KFJC. Well, I think that that's very well put. I couldn't agree more. Now, when we talk about the facts here a little bit, there's a lot of rather entertaining things in this, but again, this is not an entertaining group, and these people's attempt to stomp on KFJC through the person of college president Tom Clements. And again, I have no idea at this point whether Tom Clements, the president of Foothill, actually said if such things were true, he would take action to see them stopped. I mean, that could be just accuracy in academia's perception of the conversation or whatever. It'll be interesting to see what develops, of course, because we are a college radio station. We are linked to the college inextricably. I suppose that Mr. Clemens certainly has an interest in the radio station, so we will see. Again, some of the most interesting things are the things that they picked up on, but what was most interesting is that they don't really seem to have processed this stuff. Again, they're not particularly interested in truth. They don't dispute the truth of any of this. The closest thing to an argument that they come up with is a sort of ad hominem argument that this is kook talk. And, you know, do you believe this? Boy, this is crazy. You notice them not talking about Western goals, the World Anti-Communist League, things of that nature. Well, we're going to help these folks at Accuracy in Academia out tonight because we're hoping that, this tape will get shot right out in the mail to them. And we're going to help these people to understand a little bit more about the World Anti-Communist League and stuff, since they obviously don't have the information necessary to bring it to bear on the topic in a responsible manner.
One of the things to note, too, is that in areas where we were speculating, albeit at some length, some places it was aired as speculation, some places it was aired as certainty, too. And as I say, the transcripts that were sent to Dr. Clements, a lot of it is juxtaposed. And in the letter, by the way, the letter, this is from Accuracy in Academia, the letter itself was from Accuracy in Media or on their letterhead. So it remains to be seen how faithfully, neither Nip nor I have sat down with the November 9th broadcast to see just whether they left out some other key information. A lot of the transcripts appear to be accurate, but stuff is juxtaposed in such a way as to take it out of context, and in particular in some areas they're just total non sequiturs. Again, as Nip indicated, no place is there in that article is there any kind of serious intellectual argument with what we're saying. It's simply dismissed as obvious kook talk, much the way when Galileo proposed that the Earth revolved around the Sun, whereas any fool could plainly see that the Sun moves across the zenith and revolves around the Earth, he was threatened with burning at the stake. Regrettably, it is a feature of intellectual history that new ideas, particularly ones that run counter to people's presuppositions, even if they're correct, meet with an awful lot of opposition simply as a matter of course. Now, we're going to take a look. Apparently, if one is to take what we're saying as kook talk seems to be spreading these days, and we're now going to read a bit of kook talk, as Accuracy in Media put it, from the San Francisco Examiner, specifically from the San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle of last Sunday, February 1st, 1987. We're going to read a section here of Warren Hinkle's column in the San Francisco Sunday Chronicle Examiner of 2/1/87. This is headlined, or the column is titled, Reagan's Evil Pals. And skipping down into the article after... let's read the whole article. It's from New York. On the left hand, the Gipper appears to have fallen in bed with gun runners, cocaine importers, and strange Middle Eastern middlemen in his single-minded pursuit of furtive sources of aid for his dearly beloved Contras. Everyone from the Republican National Committee on down knows that he has succeeded in making American foreign policy look both dirty and foolish in the doing. In all this, the other hand, the right hand, goes unexamined. That would be the so-called private sources, unquote, of aid for the terrorist Contras that the Gipper's administration openly encouraged. Colonel Ollie North and his Boy Scouts only turned to the buy cheap from Pentagon and sell high to Iran arms fiasco when the private funds began to peter out. A new book examines the right hand that Ronald Reagan embraced before he shook the dirty hand of the Iranians who had helped massacre his Marines in Lebanon. The book is an eyebrow raiser for anyone who still thinks the Gipper should not be either immediately committed or cashiered out of the White House. It's titled Inside the League by Scott Anderson and John Lee Anderson, recently published in New York by Dodd and Mead. The book is so hot it should rest on asbestos shelves. The copiously documented thesis of the authors is that the primary organization the Reagan White House and ever-ready Ollie North relied on to raise legal private funding for the bloodthirsty Contras was nothing but a neo-Nazi front scandalously populated by brown-shirted refugees from the former Nazi elite. The organization is the World Anti-Communist League, or WACL, a group hardly known to anyone until it burst into the press as the right-wing, do-good society that funneled private, unquote, donations to the Contras.
Channeled is a significant slip of the tongue there, as we'll get to later.
The WACL is currently headed by Major General John K. Singlaub, S-I-N-G-L-A-U-B, a war hero and well-meaning right-winger whom the authors contend, was hauled up from the dustbin of discarded military types to give a, quote, clean, unquote, image to the WACL when it moved into high gear as a sort of lethal Red Cross for the Contras. General Singlaub did his earnest best to put white shirts on the brown shirts, but it was a task almost equal to sweeping the sand from the beach. Although the ex-military man felt he had purged the extremists, unquote, from the WACL, one would be curious as to Singlaub's definition of an extremist, such a prime example of the breed is Mario Sandoval Alarcon, A-L-A-R-C-O-N, the brains behind the Guatemalan death squads, made the cut and played a prominent role at the WACL's 1985 convention in Dallas. A high point of that low-life gathering was the reading of a letter of warm greetings, unquote, from Ronald Reagan himself. The authors trace the WACL from its foundation in 1966 as a PR branch of the South Korean and Taiwanese governments. They nail as the WACL's founding fathers such Nazis of the Slovak, Croatian, Ukrainian, and Latvian stripe, who were among the elect who escaped from Europe to Latin America via an underground railroad set up by the Vatican's Refugee Relief Office. This should come as no shock, as the late Pope Pius XII's pro-German feelings in World War II were well known. The Vatican was helped in its Nazi relief scheme by British and American intelligence, who were trying to get the Nazi spy secrets and employ them against the USSR. The Andersons cite as examples of this breed one Yaroslav Stetsko, who they say was the high Nazi mugwump in the Ukraine when 7,000 Jews were murdered. Stetsko remains a high-level member of the WACL and has been invited to the White House, the authors say. I would interject he died in the spring of 1986, interestingly enough, shortly after the Chernobyl incident in his beloved former home of the Ukraine. Anyway, continuing here. Also high rollers in the WACL are former Japanese fascists who, released from captivity after the American occupation, made millions in gambling and organized crime activities and later became involved with the clandestine intelligence activities of the Reverend Moon's Unification Church. The church is closely tied to the South Korean CIA, which is ditto to the American CIA and is interlinked with the WACL. The Andersons trace WACL activities in Latin America in the 1970s through involvement with anti-Semitic Nazi groups and right-wing dictatorships such as that of Stroessner in Paraguay and inevitably to the Central American death squads. This, then, is the other hand, the legal surface hand, of the Gipper's demented scheme to fund the Contras at any cost to morality, so they can continue to torture and kill Nicaraguan peasants in the name of freedom. It's one thing to rely on the devious derring-do of Colonel North, the great American Reagan so quickly dumped when the fire got too hot. It's another to glad-hand a bunch of rich old Nazis. If they had showed up at the White House wearing brown shirts, it would only have reminded the Gipper of a movie. Well, as we said, here is some of the same sorts of prose which AIM labeled Kook Talk in discussing our presentations on One Step Beyond. Before we get into some of the substance here, some interesting information from inside the league. It'll be interesting to note whether Accuracy in Media goes after the San Francisco Sunday Chronicle Examiner or whether they content themselves to pursue relatively powerless institutions like KFJC.
That's right. That the Examiner, that bastion of the left, as everybody knows. Yes.
Published by Comrade Hearst.
Yes, indeed. Okay. We are going to talk a little bit about this. Now, bear in mind, this does connect up because, as we will see, that... Mr. Irvine and the company which he keeps is directly connected to a variety of these groups that Hinkle was talking about.
Right. Now, one thing we want to stress is we are not saying that Reed Irvine is either a Nazi or an anti-Semite. However, his labeling of our discussion of elements around the World Anti-Communist League and their fascistic tendencies is the wrong word, their fascistic creed, is frankly sort of, I don't know what the word is, a little startling perhaps, to be modest. In light of the fact that not only is Reed Irvine a former member of the World Anti-Communist League, but he is still affiliated with the organization as of recent years, as of the writing of Inside the League, which we're going to go into, and indeed, as we're going to see, was involved in a facelifting attempt to give the League a better image in reaction to the expose of the profound fascist elements within it. So, again, we are not calling Reed Irvine either a fascist or an anti-Semite or a Nazi. We are saying, however, that his labeling of our program as Kook Talk is a little incredible in light of the fact that he was obviously intimately involved with many of these same elements through Wackel and was involved, as we say, in a media facelifting to counteract exposés of the fascist elements. So his labeling of our information as Kook Talk is a little suspicious.
Yeah, and again, although we don't want to automatically suggest, as Dave said, what exactly Mr. Irvine might be, we would be very glad to have, again, Reed drop by, and perhaps he'd like to talk to Dave and I and explain how he reconciles his involvement with these particular groups with his not being that kind of person, if he claims not to be. So anyway, before we read this, again, this is from the book mentioned in Hinkle's article, Inside the League by Scott Anderson and John Lee Anderson. This is copyright 1986 and is published by Dodd Mead and Company. Before we read this section, I just want to read this again. Because of the kinds of people we're talking about, this is a letter to the authors who wrote this book. This is their frontispiece, with which they open the whole thing up. A letter to the authors from a former World Anti-Communist League member. Bear in mind Reed Irvine's long-standing involvement with the World Anti-Communist League.
Might, even before that, Nip, why don't you just go on the back flap there and read about the author's background, just so we have everything out here on the record or the transcript, as it were.
Okay, the two authors?
Probably will be, yeah.
Okay. Scott Anderson is a widely traveled freelance writer and co-author of Mega Tips. John Lee Anderson has worked for syndicated columnist Jack Anderson, no relation, and now reports for Time Magazine in Central America.
Those are who the authors are.
Again, yes, Time Magazine, another bastion of the left. Yes.
Right, from Comrade Luce.
Right, indeed. Okay, now again, this is the frontispiece, a letter to the authors of the book, the Andersons, the two Andersons, from a former World Anti-Communist League member. He says, in considering the World Anti-Communist League, you have entered a world of ideological fanaticism, racialism, ignorance, and fear, which is almost beyond the comprehension of the average American. Your subject matter is a collection of Oriental fascists, militarists, right-wing terrorists who put bombs in civilian aircraft, death squads, assassins, criminals, and many people who are as much opposed to democracy as they are communism. You are in some danger yourself. Okay, skipping into the article, they're talking about Lee Edwards, the man who put together, the name Edwards being mentioned here, put together the first American chapter of the World Anti-Communist League called the American Council for World Freedom. The time they're talking about here is the early 1970s. Edwards lined up an impressive array of conservative American leaders for the American Council for World Freedom to appear on its letterhead and to attend World Anti-Communist League functions. Lev Dobryansky, a former OSS officer in Germany during World War II, and chairman of the National Captive Nations Committee, and currently ambassador to the Bahamas, joined, as did Dr. Walter H. Judd, former Republican congressman from Minnesota, John Fisher, executive director of the American Security Council, and Reid Irvine, a longtime fixture of the far right. A year earlier, Irvine had established Accuracy in Media, quote, a watchdog of the media by promoting accuracy and fairness in reporting, unquote. ACWF, again the American chapter of WACL, ACWF's eventual president was retired Army Major General Thomas Lane. Eleanor Schlafly represented the Cardinal Menzenti Foundation. The Unification Church in the United States was also involved. Neil Solonin, president of the church in the United States, secretary general of the Freedom Leadership Foundation, and a director of the Mooney-owned Tong Il Armaments Company in Korea, was on the ACWF board. In 1973, Solonin achieved fame of sorts by joining the Reverend Moon on the Capitol steps for a three-day fast and prayer vigil beseeching God not to allow Richard Nixon's impeachment. Through the prominent conservatives who made up the American Council for World Freedom, the League was able to get American senators and congressmen, again, when they say the League here, they're talking about the World Anti-Communist League, the League was able to get American senators and congressmen to attend conferences and serve as guest speakers. Strom Thurmond, Republican senator from South Carolina, and Robert Dornan, Republican congressman from California, both spoke at League conferences in the early 1970s.
Now, again, that Reid Irvine, a former member, perhaps he's still a member, I can't say, of WACL, but certainly a former member and present affiliate of the organization, that he would be ignorant of the, that he could be ignorant of the Nazis and anti-Semites and fascists and so forth that are so heavily involved with WACL and have been from its inception, that he could be unaware of these is frankly sort of incredible in light of the following passage from Inside the League by Scott Anderson and John Lee Anderson, in which Reid Irvine is cited here as the author of a statement condemning anti-Semitism, this in response to a discussion on the floor of the WACL conference about the openly anti-Semitic policies of some of its affiliates, including the Los Tecos group that we covered in our two-part series, our two-part Radio Free America series about the World Anti-Communist League. So again, the point we're making here is that for him to label our discussion of the Nazi elements in the Galen organization and so forth grouped around the World Anti-Communist League as kook talk seems a little incredible in light of the fact that he was involved with dealing. Apparently he was dishing out his share of kook talk, quote-unquote, in and of itself, in that he was attempting to effect a facelifting for the WACL in response to exposés of these very fascist elements. Returning again to Inside the League. Confronted with this detailed investigation, this, by the way, is an investigation of the Los Tecos group by Stefan Passone, who, as we've seen, is not only a former Hoover fellow, but a key WACL member, and also very close to the Reagan administration. Confronted with this detailed investigation by one of its own most respected members, the ACWF met in Washington in April of 1973 to discuss what should be done about the Mexicans. The meeting was a study in cowardice. One council member felt that something had to be done about anti-Semitism in the League and urged the ACWF to go on record that, quote, anti-Semitism is incompatible with anti-communism, unquote. Another dissented, holding that, quote, the motion would be a political mistake as it would imply we have a guilty conscience, unquote. Finally, quote, Mr. Irvine, in parentheses Mr. Reid Irvine, proposed the following amendment, and again quoting, anti-Semitism is incompatible with enlightened, civilized conduct and we condemn the communist states for the practice of it, unquote. Irvine's motion passed overwhelmingly. Thus, the ACWF, after gathering firm evidence of the neo-fascist sentiments of its Mexican counterpart, did nothing. The ACWF remained in the League and would perhaps still be there if it weren't for its own carelessness. So again, for Reid Irvine to label our discussions of the Galen organization and intersecting elements with WACL and SS and Gestapo veterans who worked for our intelligence system and helped shape it as kook talk seems a little incredible in light of the fact that he was involved in an apparent facelifting attempt dealing with those very same issues.
Indeed, and by the way, several of the people who did drop out of the World Anti-Communist League over the Los Tecos incident joined back rather quickly thereafter, as is detailed elsewhere in the book.
Plus, there were many other Nazi and fascist elements that didn't. For example, at the 1985 WACL conference in Dallas, Texas, the representative of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations was a fellow named Ruzi Nazar, a former member of an SS punishment battalion, as we looked at from a German publication in Radio Free America number 21, who, according to Turkish anti-terrorist expert Ugur Mumcu, quoted in an Arizona Republic article, was very, very close to the Grey Wolves and the National Action Party. And also, this very same Ruzi Nazar, former SS man, went to work for U.S. intelligence, and it was either Radio Free Europe or the Voice of America, I think Radio Free Europe, and worked with former CIA station chief of Turkey, Paul Henze, who was also involved in so-called Bulgarian thesis. So this was after the alleged house cleaning of Wackel, and he was right there in there as the ABN representative in Dallas, Texas.
A little later in the book, the two authors, Scott Anderson and John Lee Anderson, are talking about the affiliation of World Anti-Communist League and many of its satellite groups with the Unification Church of the Reverend Sun Myung-moon. And, of course, we've talked at great length about Sun Myung-moon and his involvement in American domestic politics and his involvement in worldwide, quote, anti-communist, unquote, politics. What they have to say is this, and rather interesting also in light of what we're talking about tonight. The church, again meaning the Unification Church, also conducts its elaborate public relations campaign with New Right newspapers and magazines. Donald Holdgrew, spelled Holdgriewe, associate editor of the Mooney Rising Tide being the title, is also the managing editor of the Washington Inquirer, the weekly of the Conservative Council for the Defense of Freedom. The communications director for Reed Irvine's Accuracy in Media, Bernard Yoh, Y-O-H, is a regular contributor to Rising Tide and a strong defender of both the Moon and the Moon and the South Korean regime. So again, according to the Andersons, Irvine's own public relations director,
communications director, they say.
Thank you, communications director, is a strong supporter of the Moonies, those other bastions of freedom.
And apparently, Reed Irvine himself has gone on junkets financed, Asian junkets financed by the Unification Church. Returning again to Inside the League by John Anderson and Scott Lee Anderson, or Scott Anderson and John Lee Anderson. And yet the church has quietly channeled over $100 million into the South American nation of Uruguay, buying up its biggest hotel, its third largest newspaper, and a printing company, and depositing at least $50 million in one of its banks. It has also underwritten $500,000 Asian junkets for American journalists, among them Reed Irvine, chairman of Accuracy in Media, and William Rusher, publisher of National Review, through the World Media Conference, and has picked up the costs for international meetings of CAUSA, that's another Moon organization, and the International Conference of the Unity of the Sciences, that Moon organization. That was my interjection in the circumstance, under the circumstances. So apparently Reed Irvine himself is not above going on Mooney-financed junkets in Asia. Now, we're going to deal next with something which was labeled kook talk and which remains, as was clear from the context of our November 9th broadcast, was a matter of informed speculation. We're not saying that it is true. What we're asking is it true, and citing information which would indicate that that is a possibility. And specifically, this dealing with the possibility that was discussed in the bulk of the excerpted One Step Beyond broadcast, that elements of our national security establishment, such as those grouped around the World Anti-Communist League, other extreme right-wingers, and would are perhaps engaged in dispatching liberals via cancer. And we're going to cite some information that would indicate that that is not such a preposterous notion.
One of the places, now we don't have that with us tonight, but our listeners have heard it before. We had before cited a document that was dated, I believe, 1954, that was actually a CIA document obtained from Freedom of Information Act, which was in the book documents, and the authors...
Well, this wasn't actually in the book documents.
No, the
Memo.
Interagency memo was in documents.
Yes, by Christy Macy and Stacy Kaplan. I think copyright 1975, Penguin Books, I believe, soft cover edition.
Right, and they're not actually authors, they're editors, because what they're dealing with are declassified documents. That document that we've shared on the air was an internal agency document where two CIA people were talking rather blithely, or one was writing to the other in response, talking rather blithely about different ways to cause death, to make it look like an accident. Now, this is 1954. Other documents have suggested that the CIA has long had the capacity to give people cancer.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Now, here's a rather interesting little snippet and a rather provocative statement from a man who ought to know a few things because of his background. The man is John Stockwell. John Stockwell, the highest-ranking official ever to resign from the CIA. Among other things, he was in charge of the Angolan Task Force in Africa in the 1970s. This is from an article in discussing his appearance at Stanford. The article was published in the Stanford Daily, April 27, 1984, and the article is by Karen Ballerman, and it's headline, Stockwell Pans CIA Activities. And it's just a brief snippet, but a rather intriguing snippet. Down at the bottom of the article says, Stockwell stated three reasons why he feels the American public needs to be concerned about CIA covert actions. Quote, first, people don't run such operations overseas and then come back model citizens. They run covert experiments involving spreading viruses on the American public. Well, a rather interesting and somewhat provocative statement from Mr. Stockwell.
Right, and again, there have been several viruses linked to cancer, and the question is there, what sorts of viruses are they spreading among the American people, according to Mr. Stockwell?
Yes, and again, the folks in Accuracy in Media, although I realize it's extremely difficult to prove a negative from an argumentative position, still, nonetheless, I would like to see you folks discredit John Stockwell's credentials, considering he's, again, as they mentioned, the highest-ranking man ever to quit the CIA. I'd like anybody in Accuracy and Media to come out and explain why we shouldn't believe Mr. Stockwell more than we should believe Reed Irvine when he labels such things kook talk.
Some more information concerning the CIA and their abilities to give people cancer. This comes from a book called Acid Dreams, subtitled The CIA, LSD, and the 60s Rebellion, co-authored by Martin A. Lee and Bruce Schlain, S-H-L-A-I-N. It's copyrighted 1985 and published in soft cover by the Grove Press. So that is the book we're going to be reading from here. And in the introduction to this book, the authors describe some of the information they came upon while researching the CIA's various mind control projects. Reading now from Acid Dreams by Martin Lee and Bruce Schlain. In the course of our inquiry, we uncovered CIA documents describing experiments in sensory deprivation, sleep teaching, ESP, subliminal projection, electronic brain stimulation, and many other methods that might have application for behavior modification. One project was designed to turn people into programmed assassins who would kill on automatic command. Another document mentions, quote, hypnotically induced anxieties, unquote, and, quote, induced pain as a form of physical and psychological control, unquote. There were repeated references to exotic drugs and biological agents that caused headache clusters, unquote, uncontrollable twitching or drooling, or a lobotomy-like stupor. And pay very close attention to the next sentence. Deadly chemicals were concocted for the sole purpose of inducing a heart attack or cancer without leaving a clue as to the actual source of the disease. I'm going to read that last sentence again. Deadly chemicals were concocted for the sole purpose of inducing a heart attack or cancer without leaving a clue as to the actual source of the disease. That from Acid Dreams, again by Martin Lee and Bruce Schlain.